what may be forward for you is not the same as for someone else. For example, as a very real example, and it comes through this, say a person has always been very selfish and has only lived for their own reality. The only thing they wanted was pleasure and sensual enjoyment and to have other people serve them. And then they gradually maybe become struck with patriotic fervor. And they you know, decide that they're going to enlist in the army and they're going to go help fight this war, whatever war might be happening at that time, not speaking specifically of this one. But, and that soldier goes out and he suddenly disciplines himself and he trains and he learns to shoot a gun and he goes out and he actually, you know, fights the war. Well, oddly enough, that could actually be forward direction for that person, because at least there was some ideal that was bigger than his own desire for his own pleasure, and he was willing to motivate himself to do it. And even if he dies in that cause, that could actually be a forward motion for him, because otherwise his entire world would have just been himself. To be willing to give your life for a cause you believe in, even if that cause is not as noble as a cause that somebody else might believe in, can still be forward progress for him. But if someone who has a great understanding of the unity of all life, for such a person to become a soldier and to pick up a gun could be a great backwards movement for him, because the cause to which he should give his life is in another direction. It just depends on where you're standing on the spectrum. Now, when I was talking about this here, morally asleep, let me just sort of see what I want to say here. The most important point of each of these qualities, morally asleep, I love that myself. Morally asleep. This is the state of mind in which we are entirely reactive. We're not creative in our responses to life, we simply react. We haven't the energy to initiate, we just respond. Now, it's important when we think about the feelings of the heart and the things that happen to us, that a lot of times the reason we consider them to be wounds is because we feel like we don't have any creative response to it. We're just reactive. Things that are done to us in childhood, for example, and so on. And part of the way we escape from the hold these have on us is by moving, as I'll show you here, as we progress, to the stage where we take creative action, and that we don't just have to feel that we're always reactive. This state of consciousness is entirely, it's identified with matter. And that also, what that means is identified with the body and with the material world. And what that means is, in the material world, everything is separate. You know, I am separate from you. The chair is separate from the floor. This church is separate from other churches. And a lot of the suffering that we feel inside ourselves come because we are so identified with the body and its separateness that we do have this distinct sense that people do things to me and there's nothing I can do to influence it. And there's no expansive sympathy with other people's reality when we're in this lower state of consciousness. And a lot of times, if you really examine where your griefs are, you'll see it's because you're reactive, not creative, and you're so strongly identified with yourself as a separate being that you have no feeling of compassion or understanding of why someone else would treat you that way. You can't see it. I remember my friend Paula, who was such a sweetheart, when she was running this business at one point, somebody did something that was extremely inconsiderate and caused her a great deal of inconvenience. And I caught her when she was in her reactive moment. And she was very identified with herself. And she was quite upset with what this woman was doing to her. But as she walked from where she was venting her upset to me at the doorway of this store, she had to walk the length of the store to get to the telephone to call this woman up and tell her, give her a piece of her mind, what she was going to do. As we walked along, she began to be more creative. She started out being more creative. She started thinking about how she could, you know, the many different things she could do if these were the circumstances she had to work with. And she started identifying with more than just herself. She started thinking about how hard this woman works, how many things in her life she has to juggle, how she has two young children in addition to this full-time job, how many times this woman had stayed with her, and what a good heart she really has. And all of a sudden, by the time she dialed the number and calls up, instead of the way she had been minutes earlier, it was, "Hi, how are you doing? Just thinking of you, wanted to call." You know? And there was nothing fake about it. It was just, she'd started out being hurt, but extricated herself by expanding her consciousness. And then after a few minutes, she did not bring up the subject. "Hey, I was wondering about," I don't even remember what it was. "I heard, you know, that you're thinking of doing this, and I was just wondering what you had in mind. You know, gee, that sounds good, you know, but when I thought about it," and just suddenly they're just having a perfectly nice conversation. Nobody's hurt, nobody's upset with anybody. If she had stayed here, if she had acted from this, what would have come of it? In what goes with identified with the body is that you're also very much in the senses. That reality to you is very much what you can see and feel, and you become very pleasure-oriented. I'm not going to go into all aspects of this. What this has to do is that your happiness comes primarily from the senses. What characterizes our attitudes here is where does our happiness come from? You know, when we're in this state of awareness, subtle things don't make us happy. Other people's happiness does not make us happy. The only thing that makes us happy is what we can really identify with ourselves as our own. Let me see what I'm trying to say here. The only thing that motivates us to move is fear, is fear of being hurt, you know, worse punishment. What motivates us to action is the fear of punishment, which is that we're not self-motivated at all. It's only if we're very threatened. And when we want to avoid pain in this state, we try to avoid pain by becoming unconscious. And this is the key here. You know, this is the classic condition that people would call denial. That we want, if we whenever anything happens to us that we think is going to hurt us, we try to just go unconscious about it. And this is what's important to realize here. It'll never take us anywhere. We know, and unconscious is, you know, big ways: sleeping too much, drugs, drinking, watching too much television, too much sense indulgence. Just one way or another that I have this sense of pain and I want to deal with it by becoming unconscious. The difficulty like that is that the pain doesn't cease to motivate us. We just become unconscious of the fact that it is, you see. And when we're dealing with the wounds of the heart, that's where these four ways of dealing with unhappiness are very important. On the lowest level, we try to deal with the sufferings of the heart by just dulling our consciousness to their existence. Because if we're so identified with the body and we're so reactive, we don't know what to do with it. We don't have any tools to expand beyond that suffering, so we just try to dull ourselves to it. But I always remember in this context the movie The Wizard of Oz, and which I don't remember vividly because I haven't seen it in a long time, but I know there's that one point where they finally discover that this huge creature that is the wizard is actually some little rather nebbish-like fellow just working the tools behind the screen, and then everything begins to shift from that point. That image has always stayed with me, and I often think that when we try to avoid what we're really feeling by going unconscious, it just becomes this spewing dragon of steam, and it still runs us from the back. You know, just from back where we can't see it, it's still completely in charge because we're instinctively, constantly reacting in such a way as to try to protect that secret that we're keeping. So we don't know it, but we've put it completely in charge, much more than if we were facing it directly, because we have no idea where our pain is coming from. And if we don't know where our pain is coming from, we tend to think it's been caused by the events of the moment. I watched a marriage disintegrate from a man who had had an enormous amount of difficulty in his childhood and had just never worked with any of it, just was there. He just was always trying to go past it without resolving or facing any of it. And when he got married, and the gal he married had her own story, which was equally complicated, and when she would do her unpredictable things, the agony he would experience from even small gestures on her part was because she would open a strata within him. And it was an impossible to resolve situation because the intensity of the pain he would feel, he could only connect it to her actions. And he was just persuaded that her actions were causing the intensity of his feelings. And even if her actions were not laudable, he'd spent so much time trying to be unconscious about everything else that happened to him. It was just total confusion if you don't know where your pain is coming from. Now, you can't just learn about it by diving into everything. It's not so much that you have to explore every aspect of your suffering, but you have to overcome your fear of it. And that's just really the simple words. You have to overcome your fear of it. As long as you fear these experiences or this knowledge, it holds you prisoner. Now, sometimes and often, the way you develop the courage to face these things, as I say, is not by diving into it, but by developing higher awareness that gives it a context. Sometimes people come to me with issues that are just huge. I mean, they're just gigantic. And it's very clear that for them to dive into that would just paralyze them, destroy them. I say, just put it over here, and why don't we go train over here? You know, let's meditate, let's learn another perspective on life, let's get a generous flow of energy, let's work on your health, you know. Then we'll gradually come back to this. Even more in the spiritual teaching, if you think of it in terms of Kriya, yoga, if you think of it in terms of the chakras, these are the chakras. Aren't they nice? They're the chakras. Okay. And within each of these chakras, as I was saying, and speaking of the heart, there are all these experiences that you have, and they're from lifetimes you don't even remember. So you're not walking around knowing them all the time. And thank God, that's what saves us. Imagine all the griefs you've had in this life. Think if you could remember all of them. I mean, really, talk about the punies. We would just never get out of bed. When you start meditating, you start running a current through the chakras. It's actually, I'm having it go around, but it actually goes right through them. And you just, this current, as you go up and down, with Kriya especially, but with any kind of meditation, you're actually running the energy of the breath in an ever more powerful circuit that goes up and down the spine. That circuit of energy keeps, that circuit of the breath and your own energy creates magnetism, is the word I wanted to say. Creates increasing magnetism, and the practice of Kriya specifically, or any technique in which you are interiorizing your energy, creates a stronger and stronger inward circuit until all the energy that empowers the senses gets drawn into it, and you become less and less conscious of the world through the senses. That's why when you sit and meditate with devotion, with concentration, do your Kriya practice, you won't, even if your mind is still a little restless, you really won't remember where you are. You won't be hearing the sounds around you because the magnetism of the inner circuit has withdrawn the energy from the sense telephones, as Master calls, and you don't hear them ringing anymore. Okay, and that's how you interiorize. Now, the other thing that's happening is every time this wave of energy goes up and down the chakras, this is energy and the chakras are energy, and there's a magnetic interchange between those two forces. And the way magnetism works is whatever magnetism is greater, you know, it sucks the other magnetism into it. I used to, when I used to sew a lot when I was a teenager and as an older child, and I always had a couple of magnets in my little sewing box, because when I'd get tired of sewing, I'd play with the pins, you know, because it was just such fun
to lay out the pins and run the magnet over and watch the pins pop around and have them here and just all the different things you can do with bigger and smaller magnets and all the little games that you can play with them. Well, what's happening here is every single time you do a single kriya, and depending on how much power you have in it, how much grace you've drawn by your devotion, every little vortex within the chakras that has less energy to stick to the chakra than the flow of energy going up the spine has, gets sucked into it. Okay? Now, if you think of it like a river flowing, and you think of a river flowing that has whirlpools, have you ever been in a river where you just sort of suddenly you see that something has happened, and it can be even a powerful river, but this powerful whirlpool is over here. And sometimes just for fun, if you're playing in it, you'll see that if you move this tree branch and lift this log a little bit and shift that rock, you can free the whirlpool and it'll just go into the river. And of course, when the whirlpool is freed, it becomes part of the river and the whirlpool ceases to exist because the whirlpool is exactly the same as the river. It just got redirected in a certain way. Now, everything in this universe is energy and consciousness, and it's just what are we conscious of? And what we're conscious of is determined by the magnetism in the chakras, which draws our consciousness to a focus in certain realities. But you know, the husband who betrayed you, and the child that drowned, and the bankruptcy you went through, they're not in there, you know. There's no place where it's in there. It's merely the vibration of energy, and even more deeply, your response to that, that fell on the spectrum between perfect Christ consciousness and being morally asleep over many incarnations that makes the pattern. So every time energy flows in the right way, and every time you increase the energy at the spiritual eye, there's everything just is constantly being rearranged. It's being rearranged minute by minute. But it's especially being rearranged by your meditation practice. That's why one round of kriya, which is one inhalation and exhalation, done in a certain way relating to the chakras, is the equivalent of 1 year of life. Because in 1 year, is that correct? One kriya is 1 year, if I said that right?